and welcome to Food for Thought. I'm Dee Dee McGrail.
And I'm Laura Mangone. How are you, my friend?
I am well.
Have you recovered from the... We got it just a little, like, just a hair of a segment. Did you watch the debate?
Oh, I was hoping, you know, sometimes... What's that? I don't know. It's in the car, I think. I would always like to start on politics, if you don't mind. So, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty... I was literally speechless while I was watching. Literally, like, flabbergasted that that is our president and that's how he acts. Like, yeah. A six-year-old.
Yes, and I was very agitated before the debate started because I just kept thinking, gosh, if Biden blows it, I'm going to be so upset, you know?
Right.
And my first thought was, of course, I noticed how Trump was interrupting constantly. But my first thought that with Biden was not being sort of powerful enough. I felt like Trump at least was... Before he started interrupting like crazy, he was very assertive. I don't know what the best word is to describe it. There was something that he was doing that Biden wasn't doing.
Right. Biden has a different demeanor. He just has a different demeanor.
It's just different. And he's very confident, like in this kind of combative state. I think his confidence waned over the course of the...
I am so proud that he didn't lose his, you know, really blow his cork, because it would have been very ugly. I kept saying, keep it together.
Right.
And I really appreciated that he would turn to the camera and speak to the American people as opposed to...
Right.
It was... The news outlets are still talking about it. And CNN, one of the CNN reporters, just after the debate was over, when they are now going to do their, you know, play-by-play and critique it, basically apologized and said, I don't know if the censors are going to leave this in or not, but that was a shit show. That's what she said on air.
Really? On a CNN reporter?
Yeah. And then one of the CNN reporters said that, you know, everybody's been making all these suggestions about mute buttons and this and that. And he said, I think they should be in soundproof booths like beauty pageant contestants, and no possibility of crosstalk, no possibility of interruptions. They just asked a question, answer a question so that we can hear, you know, their answers to our questions about what's the future supposed to look like or what their vision of the future is.
Yes, but it's only, you know, the organization that's allowed to, you know, change the rules on how these debates are done. It's only because Trump is in there that we even have to think about doing these extreme measures of putting people
in. Of course, it was the most disrespectful thing. I mean, and poor Chris Wallace, you know, everybody's saying what a shitty job he did, but good God, what a task he had. You know, yeah, he's also got to be sort of, he had to be respectful. This is the president. And he at one point was just like, hey, fellas, stop it. Yeah.
Well, I think the Facebook meme that was being shared was of Samuel Jackson from Pulp Fiction.
Right.
Think 2 minutes. Like there was some part from the movie where he basically gives
I said 2 minutes, M or effer.
M or effer. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, out of control.
Out of control. And I'm anxious for Wednesday. It's gonna be Harris and Pence. It's gonna be very interesting.
I think he's gonna wipe him.
The floor.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to see. And the next debate, presidential debate, is supposed to be a town hall. So that's going to also be interesting because there's, you know, people asking questions. It's not really the moderator asking questions. The moderator at this point is just going to be a referee.
Right. So it might be a lot different because it's one thing for him to cut off the moderator, cut off Biden. But when the American people, these are supposedly undecided voters to boot.
Yes.
So if they ask a question and Trump just doesn't answer it, you know, right. I mean, it will be interesting. I will have an easier time watching that. I was just very nervous about Biden and how he was going to do. But basically, he's ahead so far in the polls that all he had to do was not lose anybody.
Exactly.
So, you know, in that case, I don't think he did.
Right. And it's a big, big deal that Trump didn't dissuade the young boys and their, you know, Proud Boys, sorry. And, you know, they basically have now taken up the standby, quote unquote, as their motto. It's now, you know, they're embroidering it on their jackets. We're standing by.
But you know what the right wingers are saying about that? Because I keep a couple of them in my Facebook feed because I want to see what the crazy people are doing. The right wingers are spewing that Proud Boys actually doesn't stand for any of that nonsense, and they actually it's all good stuff that they stand for, and it's really the media that is distorting portraying them as being white supremacist group, and that's like the farthest from the truth.
But
that's
it is
the right wingers doing.
Yeah, but that is not the truth, because I've seen interviews with Proud Boys, you know, happy to take on this new logo and you know, vowing that they're going to be at voting. You know, he said, go to your voting places, see what's going on. They've already making plans for demonstrations at voting outlets. I mean, it's very disturbing. It's just all very disturbing. And I wish that just for once and for all, it wouldn't be like far right and far left. Most Democrats are not far left. They're, right. You know, we're all sort of in the middle of a lot of different issues, but everyone's being pegged as a super conservative or a super liberal. And that's not the case.
I have to admit that if I had my druthers, I would be far left. I would be for Bernie. I would be for AOC. I really would, but I don't feel that I'm a realist.
Yeah.
And I don't feel that that's the approach to take right now with a borderline, you know, dictator.
I mean, I'm a registered independent, right? So I could be swayed either way. It depends on the person that's put up. And quite frankly, that debate on both sides was horrific.
So you're an independent, you're a registered independent. I registered as an independent when I was 18 years old and I'm 55.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Ditto.
The last time I voted for a Republican president was George Jr.'s first term.
I think I voted Republican prior to that.
So you've been voting Democrat ever since?
I have gone back and forth, quite frankly. It depends on the candidate.
Right.
I mean, yes.
Right.
Probably for the past 15 years, I have been voting Democratic. But I'm independent. Give me a candidate who's, you know, makes sense and is going to do things and has a prospectus about what's going to happen and where we're going to go and the things that are important to them. But everyone is being portrayed as such a far right or a far left. It's just unrealistic, and it's not the reality.
I would vote for Colin Powell in a second, but he's not running. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would vote for a very reasonable sort of level-headed, good-hearted Republican in a heartbeat.
Me too.
I've not been shown one in
exactly.
I think now that Trump has been there, you know what will happen is, I think the bar has shifted for me, and I think in the future, I will look at Republican candidates in a new light. I will. The bar has been lowered.
Oh, are you kidding? This was the worst presidential debate in the history of the presidency.
Well, he's the worst president in the history of the presidency. So, but it used to be, you know, Sarah Palin used to be scary. Mitt Romney used to make me crazy. Like, I don't really.
Bush used to be scary. But
right.
In
a second.
Yeah. But in comparison, they were nothing.
Nothing.
Okay.
One last thing, because we're going to run out of time, but Amy, what's her name?
Yeah. Connor, Connie.
Barrett.
I don't remember all three names. I know who you mean. The Supreme Court Justice who is being.
ACP, yes. Let's call her.
Yes.
But the other thing in terms of, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to vote for Trump based on one issue, and that's pro-life. And yep. I think it's an absolute tragedy that people are going to vote on one issue like that. Now, with this woman coming in, potentially coming in as the Supreme Court Justice, although I consider myself, I'm an independent, but I'm also pretty, in terms of pro-choice, pro-life, I'm pro-choice, but I'm probably the farthest toward pro-life that you could ever be, because I do feel that morally, if it were just a moral question, mm-hmm. it's a no-brainer. It's pro-life.
Yeah, I think everybody would be. Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of people would be, but it's also the choice of you making a decision about your body versus the government making a decision about your body.
Right. And there was another, someone posted something that said, you know, pro-choice was not something about, was not the end of, something about abortion. It was the end of people dying getting abortions. It was the end of, it was legalizing something that was going to happen anyway. It was going to happen.
Right, it was regulating it so people were safer. Right.
Now, this Amy Barrett person, you know, I saw one interview and it was only a couple of excerpts, but she was talking about Roe v. Wade and she was saying, look, I don't see that going away anytime soon. But what she does see is some restrictions on abortion. And I have to say, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I think there should be restrictions. I don't think it should be used as a form of birth control.
I agree.
No, that you can't, you shouldn't get a late term abortion. You just shouldn't.
I agree. 100%.
A danger to the mother or the baby. Like you just.
I totally agree with that.
So, and that goes state to state. So basically I think the worst that's going to happen, even if Roe v. Wade gets overturned, it's going to go to the states. So guess what's going to happen? Everyone in Tennessee who wants an abortion is going to go to
West Virginia,
New York, or New Jersey, right. or wherever. You know, it's just, that's what's going to happen.
Right.
Because there will still be them happening. Unfortunately, a lot of people can't afford to travel and, you know, go through such extremes. And they're going to, you know, do something potentially lethal to themselves.
Right.
It's insane. And I have born again Christian friends. I have a couple of born again Christian friends and they are voting on this at this one point. And it's like, Jesus would not want you to do this.
Well, and like all other issues, it's not black and white. There's the truth is in the gray and there are a lot of different ramifications of every single law, every single bill that's being passed, you know, and you can't just see it as black and white. There's a lot of in between.
Now, so, how are we? I know we got 3 minutes. How are we going to segue from like?
I'm going to segue just like this. Okay, we're done talking about political stuff, and we've got a couple of minutes. I'm just going to preview what we're going to be talking about this week. In the past weeks, I guess it's been like 4 weeks now, I've been visiting another area of the world and reading a full book, basically 250 page book about said region. I've been reading from the Lonely Planet World Food Books, and this week it's the Caribbean. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you about my adventures traveling virtually traveling all over the Caribbean this week.
Cool.
I went to a Caribbean market down in Trenton and had a really interesting conversation with a woman that worked there. I revisited a couple of islands that I've been to and the foods that I ate there. And I prepared something that was from one of those areas. So I have a lot. I have a little bit of the history of islands, a little bit about popular foods in certain areas, and specifically, while this book talked about all Caribbean islands, I sort of, because of the ingredients that I had and because of what I could and couldn't find at the market, I sort of concentrated on Jamaica. So I made a lovely swordfish with peas and greens, which was delicious. And I can tell the recipe and talk about some other foods that are popular in Caribbean islands and some of my adventures in the Caribbean. So it's, that's.
Yeah, I did have some commentary on that in terms of, definition of Caribbean islands.
Yep.
Are islands that are on the Caribbean, but each of those islands has a different kind of.
Absolutely, and I'm going to tell you all about it when we come back.
Cool.
I'll be right back.
Attention Medicare recipients and anyone turning 65. Medicare has approved new benefits not included with original Medicare and older Medicare Advantage plans. You may not be getting all of the benefits you're entitled to, including in-home aids, telephone appointments with your doctors, home-delivered meals and prescriptions. These benefits may be available and it's a free call to enroll. The new plans may also offer free eyeglasses, free hearing aids, free wellness visits, and gym memberships. Call the Medicare benefits line now. It's easy. Call 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292. Find out if you're eligible for new benefits like meal and prescription delivery, in-home aids, and telemedicine. Some plans may have a $0 monthly premium or zero copays for big out-of-pocket savings. Not all Medicare Advantage plans are alike. The new plans have more benefits for many people. Call 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292.
Paid non-attorney spokesperson. Are you over the age of 60 and been diagnosed with lung cancer? If so, you and your family may qualify for a cash award. Our experienced attorneys are standing by to evaluate whether you have a lung cancer claim that qualifies you for a cash award. The consultation is absolutely free, and there is no risk and no money out of pocket. We only receive a fee when we secure you and your family a settlement. 250,000 people are diagnosed with lung cancer every year. You're not alone in this battle. We can help make sure that you and your family are financially safe and that medical expenses are covered. Again, if you've been diagnosed with lung cancer and are over age 60, call now. Don't delay. There are deadlines for filing claims. We're standing by 24/7. Call us at 1-855-398-1754. 1-855-398-1754. That's 1-855-398-1754. Attorney Advertising. William Stephacker Jr. is the attorney responsible for this ad. Main office, Granton, Pennsylvania. May not be available in all states.
I can't get my computer to work.
Let me help you with that.
How'd you do that? I just got techie with Geeks On Site.
Our geeks literally come on site. No need to stop what you're doing or block off time. We come to your home, office, or wherever you are. And we don't just fix whatever computer issues you might be having. We explain and teach you along the way so you can feel empowered and then help others at home or in your office. Better yet, don't have time for tech support to come to you? Let us remote into your desktop or laptop, and one of our geeks will instantly walk you through. We offer affordable prices on our remote services and IT support. You and those in your office will never have to wait hours to have your technical questions answered. Get your free computer diagnosis today with your very own geek.
Get started now and we'll help you instantly. Call 844-606-8411. 844-606-8411. That's 844-606-8411.
And welcome back to Food for Thought.
And we're back.
I'm testing. I'm outside. Can you tell?
I can tell. I can see you.
Open my computer connection. I've never done it from outside before. I guess it's going to work.
Hopefully. I will let you know if you go kerflooey.
If I go kaplooey, let me know.
I will. So, in the beginning, after Christopher Columbus started traveling around and discovering all these new areas, Europeans started, you know, the influx, the migration to not only America, but other, you know, all of the islands. And, you know, the islands in the Caribbean chain include the Greater Antilles, which are the ones that are more west, like Aruba, Bonaire, the Dutch Islands in that western hemisphere, and the Lesser Antilles, which are ones that are closer to the east. So it's basically, the Caribbean is basically a quadrant. So the Greater Antilles are on the left, or the west. The Lesser Antilles are on the right, or the east. And then along that Caribbean chain, there's the Leeward Islands, which are the northern part of the islands, and the Windward, which are down. And this is in between the Caribbean and the Atlantic, basically.
Right.
And that's the dividing of Windward and Leeward is where the two oceans meet. So, you know, they're all starting to be populated. Obviously, there were indigenous peoples in all of the islands, as just as in America, there are American Indians. There's indigenous people all over these islands as well. Right. But for the most part, in the beginning of the 1800s, when Europeans started, you know, really broadening their horizons and exploring and coming to colonize, it's pretty specific where everyone came from. You know, the English started settling in, and it's even, you know, while occupations have gone back and forth and democracies have changed over the years, are still, you know, almost ever changing. As we know, the British, the English, populated the majority of the islands, just as we know, you know, their colonies, the British colonies, the Queen Elizabeth is now still sovereign of, so Bermuda, Bahamas, all the way down the entire island chain to Trinidad and Tobago. Those were all the English.
Right.
From Spain, they went to Cuba, they went to Puerto Rico, they went to the Dominican Republic. And, you know, still today, you think about what's the language in those islands. The French went to St. Barts, went to Martinique, went to Haiti, went to Guadeloupe, you know, all still French-speaking islands because the French colonized. And the Dutch. Dutch were mostly in the western islands, so even today, Bonaire, the ABCs. So it's Aruba, Bonaire, and Curaçao are the Dutch. And then St. Martin, they were fighting over, so it's half French, half Dutch. And it's right. Still, you know, still to this day, these are the same people that colonized these areas. So the foods that they're eating on all of these islands, with the exception of the indigenous population, because those, you know, cultural cuisines always shone through, you know, they're from their respective countries came a lot of the food that they were bringing with them and the culture that they were bringing with them.
Right. So each country, and this is what I find fascinating about Caribbean cuisine, is that mm-hmm. it's such a fusion of a multitude of cuisines.
It is primarily, if you look back, and this book was really pretty explicit about it, if you look back, it depended on a number of different factors. So when people are now coming from, the people were now migrating from Europe, in addition to the cultures and the cuisines they were bringing with them, because at the time slavery was a popular, you know, people had slaves, they were bringing crew on those ships, they were bringing slaves on those trips, on those ships. They were bringing, especially from Asia, China, Japan, they were bringing indentured servants. And each sort of had their expertise, just like, you know, you think about old New York and when the Irish came and when the Italians came and, like, you know, the career du jour for a lot of Italians that migrated to New York was, you know, they were masons, and they were, you know, there were specific careers that a lot of these nationalities sort of tended to do. They were experts in certain fields. So much like everything else, the foods that they brought with them were from their original ports of call, their what their heritage was. But then, of course, there was the climate. You know, this now for a lot of Europe, this was a brand new climate that they had to now get accustomed to, tropical climates, things growing in abundance that they really didn't have at home, things that they tried to propagate and tried to, you know, start new crops that they perhaps were working in Denmark, but they weren't working when they then got to Aruba or St. Martin. So, very, very interesting. And I'm specifically really interested in the Caribbean. I was fortunate enough that when I was in high school, my dad had a business that took him to the Caribbean a lot. He traveled. He had an office in St. Thomas, and we would get, fortunately, I as the youngest one, like, even this is something with my brothers and sister, you know, they didn't get to go as much as I did because I was younger, and he had now moved from he had retired from his initial job. And this was a job that was sort of subsidiary to my uncle's business. So it was late in life. And I was fortunate that I would get to go with him on a trip. You know, if he was going somewhere for a weekend, I would go. And if he had a meeting in, Trinidad, I would go with him. And he would park me on a beach somewhere and give me some money for lunch. And he'd go have his meeting and do his deal and then come back. And then we'd go back to St. Thomas. Or, you know, so I've been to many, many, actually the only one of the Leeward and Windward Islands that I haven't been to is St. Vincent and the Grenadines. And it's my hope at some point, maybe for my 60th birthday, I'll have something there. Or it's literally, when I was a kid, I had a map on my wall and I used to put push pins in it for every island I had been to. And that's the only one left. I mean, I didn't do them all when I was a kid. I've been, you know, doing them as an adult as well, but that's the only one left. But
based on everything you're saying, is that the Caribbean in particular is some of the most, and I don't want to use the word, it's a strong word to call bastardized, but the cuisines are pretty, they're where other countries have kind of, or areas of the world, they really have held on to the indigenous.
Well, not necessarily, because think about our country. You know, the French the French moved to the South, to New Orleans. That's all Creole and Cajun. Think about our Italian, you and I, our Italian heritage from Brooklyn. We're making things that our grandparents made. People that are out west or making foods that maybe came up from Mexico or came from their families. You know, it's the German influence in the middle of the country and the Minnesota, north central part of the country. It's sort of the same thing, right? We're cooking what our grandparents and great grandparents were cooking.
It's true. And the United States is another example. That. And I think that some of the more pure cuisines would have to be European, South American,
Asian.
Yeah.
I think everywhere is we say that, America is a melting pot, but really I think any area that you're in, the Caribbean certainly is a melting pot because people are bringing food from their culture, from their, from where they were transplanted. But again, there was indigenous people, just like American Indians, there were indigenous, Haitians and Barbadians and Bermudans. And,
right.
So because of the influx of different cultures, and primarily, and this is the biggest part of it, is the slavery and the indentured servitude. I mean, generally you can say on the whole, even though all of these European countries settled in the Caribbean, the one thing they had in common was a lot of their slaves were from West Africa. So that is now has become what is more of a quote unquote Caribbean type food. It's basically African food with a slant towards whatever their, you know, their European ancestors cooked. So I sort of focused on Jamaica because there's, I just love Jamaican food. I love jerk. I love salt fish, which you as well. It's basically bacala. You know, right. If you're, it's everywhere. If you're in South America, it's bacalao. If you're in West Africa, it's saltfish. It's everywhere because it was something that there was an abundance, obviously, of cod.
And you could preserve it.
And that it was preserved. Exactly. It could be preserved for years. So it was, right. You know, when without refrigeration, without the means of preserving items. I really feel like it most probably singularly is the most common food item among every, you know, all over the globe because of those properties, because it was easy to, it was abundant and it was easy to preserve. So the national dish of Jamaica, which is my favorite, which I think one of the reasons I love it so much is it's sort of a main course, but you can eat it for, you basically eat it for breakfast or for brunch. And I like to eat real food for breakfast and brunch, like I know you do as well. Like,
yeah.
So it's ackee and saltfish. And ackee is
this is Jamaican.
This is all over the Caribbean, but ackee and saltfish is the national dish of Jamaica. They make it there predominantly, but it's because it's West African in nature, it's pretty much all over the Caribbean. Mm-hmm. So ackee is very interesting. Do you remember last week we were talking about foods that could possibly be poisonous in some way? We were talking about the Japanese blowfish.
Right.
So ackee, if it's a very interesting fruit. It's very pretty. It starts green. And then the rind gets super red on the outside of it. It has very pale yellow flesh and it opens up almost like a flower. I will post a picture of it because it's really beautiful. And it has these giant, almost grape-sized black seeds that right. come out of, they're like tulip-shaped flowers when they open. And the meat of the ackee is delicious. But the rind of the ackee, specifically if it's not ripe, is completely poisonous. Like it's like drop dead. If you eat a piece of it, you're dead. Like toxins.
Okay.
But the flesh of it is really yummy and it gets sauteed with onions and garlic. And then it's just mixed with saltfish. So bacala, basically, that's been cut up and soaked. Not soaked as much as we generally, or in Italian cuisine, how you would soak it almost so that there's no salt left in it. Right. When you make ackee and saltfish, it's only soaked for like 6 to 8 hours, maybe overnight, perhaps a day, but it's still pretty salty. But that saltiness...
The 3 days that we do it for.
Other than, right. When we're cooking, Italians cook bacalà, they're soaking it for 3 days. They're changing the water every hour. You know, we're really rehydrating that. So it's basically a piece of fresh cod when we're done. The consistency is a little bit different. It's a little bit tougher from the salt. But when you're making ackee and saltfish, you don't do that. It's still rather salty. But it's great because the ackee, with its sort of squash-like texture, absorbs that salt. It's a really interesting combination.
The sweetness of it, I would imagine, balances the salt.
It's not, although it is a fruit, it's not super sweet. It's more like pumpkin-like.
Right.
Yeah. But it's a lovely combination and it's really, really delicious. So I attempted to find some ackee. I could not. They had the Caribbean market in Trenton is a riot. Have you ever gone there?
I have not.
It's a total fun field trip. I'll go with you one day. Just really interesting, talkative people. I ended up talking to this lovely woman, Josie, who in our next segment, I'll share some information she told me, which is, I thought, fascinating about a food that I knew about, but I didn't know the extent to what she was telling me. So, yeah, I was going to make the ackee and saltfish, couldn't find ackee. They do have it in cans, which is sort of interesting. It's almost like julienne pieces. So almost if you purchase hearts of palm in a can, sure. It would look like that. The one big thing that I was trying to find is callaloo. So we're running out of time for this segment. So when we come back, we're going to talk about callaloo and we're going to talk about, do you know about amaranth?
I've heard of it. I've never cooked with it.
Well, it's wait till you hear the benefits of amaranth. It's going to blow it's going to blow your mind. Okay, so we're running out of time. We'll be back.
What a teaser.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Generic Sildenafil allows you to save up to $650 on Viagra. Why pay name brand prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get the same results for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 50 generic Sildenafil pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $750 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill for the name brand again. Get generic Sildenafil for less than $3 a pill. Call 800-590-0443 today and save up to $650 and get 50 pills for just $99. Generic Sildenafil is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting to take your call now. Call 800-590-0443. That's 800-590-0443. Again, 800-590-0443.
Attention Medicare recipients and anyone turning 65. Medicare has approved new benefits not included with original Medicare and older Medicare Advantage plans. You may not be getting all of the benefits you're entitled to, including in-home aids, telephone appointments with your doctors, home-delivered meals and prescriptions. These benefits may be available and it's a free call to enroll. The new plans may also offer free eyeglasses, free hearing aids, free wellness visits, and gym memberships. Call the Medicare benefits line now. It's easy. Call 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292. Find out if you're eligible for new benefits like meal and prescription delivery, in-home aids, and telemedicine. Some plans may have a $0 monthly premium or zero copays for big out-of-pocket savings. Not all Medicare Advantage plans are alike. The new plans have more benefits for many people. Call 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292. 800-663-7292.
And we're back.
Amaranth.
So I have used, when I'm baking gluten-free, I've used amaranth flour. I have used amaranth as a thickener. It's, you know, a thickening agent, just like ground tapioca or cornstarch. You can thicken sauces with it. And I've known that for years. I just really didn't know all of the properties. So get a load of this.
Can I interject? So mm-hmm. What is the relationship to arrowroot?
Different plant. Different.
But a similar end result.
If you're using it as a thickening agent, yes.
Okay.
But what got me on amaranth, I should start with callaloo. So callaloo is a green. It is not only a green, but it's also a preparation. So depending on what country you're in, Callaloo can be made with different greens. So in like Dominica or Grenada, when they make Callaloo, it's made with the leaves of the taro plant. If you're in Jamaica, they make Callaloo with the leaves of the amaranth plant. If you're in Trinidad, they make Callaloo with the leaves of a Dasheen plant, which is just, you know, they're all just leafy greens. But it's interesting because they it's like you're calling the dish the name of the dish, but it could be, if you're in six different islands, it could be made with six different greens, and that's their version of Callaloo. It's very interesting.
Now, I would bet each of these different greens that they use to make Callaloo has different phytonutrients, different chemical properties.
A little bit. They're all pretty much leafy, spinach-like, kale-like. You know, they're very similar. There's minute differences between them. And obviously, they're all growing in the same climate. But again, these are now coming from West Africa. These were, whether they were seeds or plants or whatever was brought from the indigenous area. So it's like saying, you know, you and I are in Europe and you like spinach and I like kale, and we both move to an island, and on your island, they're going to have kale and call that Callaloo. And on my island, they're going to have spinach and call that, you know, right. What I mean? It's so very interesting.
So Callaloo, the base of it, it's a leafy green.
It's a leafy green, yes. If you just say to someone, I want to buy some Callaloo, they're going to give you some form of leafy green. Depending on what island you're in specifically, it may be taro, it may be Dasheen, it may be amaranth. But they're all very, very similar. It's they're, you know, collard greens, kale, they're just hearty leafy greens. But the amaranth, so get this. I mean, there are so many benefits. It's a total superfood, like better than quinoa, like more protein than quinoa.
In a leafy green?
In a leafy green, but no, it's also the grain. So like the Callaloo is the green part, it's the leaves, but the amaranth itself produces a germ like a wheat. And that's what's ground if we're using it for, you know, amaranth flour if you're cooking gluten-free, or if you're using amaranth as a thickener, they're making a powder out of that grain. So this grain is gluten-free. These are all of the things that it can do for you. It's amazing to me. It can lower your cholesterol. It can fight inflammation. It has super antioxidants that protect your cells, so that many people, through many studies, and we're talking Johns Hopkins, and it's like a cancer fighter. It's like a cancer preventer. It's amazing. It normalizes your blood pressure. It's a fiber, extra, you know, huge fiber content for digestion. It boosts your immune system. And the biggest one, which I kind of didn't believe this woman, Josie, you know, she told me a couple of these things. Oh, yes, it's, you know, in her lovely accent. She was from Jamaica and was, you know, we were waxing poetic about amaranth. She told me, get this, and this is her quote, not mine. She said, why do you think African-American people don't get a lot of gray hair, or they don't show their age? And I thought it was like, you know, that sounds kind of racist, but, you know, she's an African-American woman telling me this. She said it's because of all the amaranth in their diet, because, let me say the words. Amaranth has a molecule in it that has phosphorus in it. So it affects the follicles on your head, and it makes you not get gray hair.
Okay.
Drop the mic.
Drop the flipping mic. So if you're telling me, I always wondered about this. So yeah. I remember I was, just to give a little segue, I used to ask this one friend of mine when I was in my 30s, you know, is it time for me to color my hair? And she said, oh no, honey, it's not time. And I remember I was about 38. Uh-huh. And I said, Maya, is it time to dye my hair? And she said, yes, honey, it's time. So I always wondered, could I ever reverse that?
I'm telling you what.
Could I reverse my gray hair?
So Josie at the Caribbean Market on Greenwood Avenue in Trenton, New Jersey, blew my mind. She said that, and again, I'm thinking this is like a, you know, it sounds like a stereotypical thing, but she said, haven't, in her cute accent, which I'm not going to attempt, haven't you noticed that African-Americans, she said black people, haven't you noticed that black people don't get gray hair until they're much older? I was like, yeah, I guess. She said it's from generations and generations of people that were eating amaranth morning, noon, and night, a big part of their diet. And as I learned from, you know, doing some research about it, how it really does, it attaches itself to your cells in your body. So it seriously, if you eat quite a bit of this, it literally can affect your bodily functions. She said, yeah, there's a molecule in it. And then I looked it up and it's like, shit, it's true.
It's true. Shit, man.
Yeah.
Okay, so how do we get this amaranth?
You mean how did the conversation get to amaranth?
No.
Oh.
How do we buy, where do you get it?
You can get amaranth at a Caribbean market. Store. I know. I want to go check out they didn't have any left here, but she said, oh yeah, we've got it powdered. We've got it, you know, we've got the greens, we've got the grain, we have the powder, we have the flour. You know, they have all different derivations of amaranth. And just by the by, I mean, I have amaranth in my kitchen because when I make gluten-free items, I use usually a quarter of the flour that I use. I make my own gluten-free blend. And it's amaranth powder, amaranth flour. I'm going to start like making biscuits every day with it.
Oh, I know. I'm going to make a paste and put it in my shampoo.
Isn't that crazy? It's just amazing to me. So anyway, the reason I got to amaranth was in Jamaica, if you ask for a bowl of callaloo, what they're going to give you is amaranth leaves. And generally in any of these islands, it's just the green, and generally it's sauteed with onions and garlic and some sort of aromatics. And for the most part, Scotch bonnet peppers, which Scotch bonnets are like the go-to all over the Caribbean. Hot, really hot, like fire hot. So I bought myself a couple of Scotch bonnet peppers.
Nice.
And I made two batches because my husband is not digging the spicy food lately. He's been having a little bit of reflux problems. So I made two batches of this swordfish dish that I'm going to give you the recipe in a minute. And I did not cut the pepper. I washed the pepper. And I just, when I was sauteing the vegetables, I threw the pepper in there and let it just wilt a little bit and then took it out. I am telling you, it was on fire.
Just with the whole pepper sauteed?
Whole pepper, did not puncture it, didn't have a seed, a rind, pith, nothing. Is freaking hot. But it's one of the reasons I like, you know, Jamaican food. It's in all their really popular Jamaican jerk chicken. Definitely has to have Scotch bonnets.
Let's just touch on some people who have a tendency to have ulcers or they have sensitive stomachs. They feel that, and I'm not talking about reflux because what Maria is going through is different, but if you have a sensitive stomach or are predisposed to ulcers,
Or heartburn.
Hot peppers actually help because of the capsaicin.
Capsaicin, yeah.
Which is in it. So it actually creates this like little a lining.
Yep.
A protective lining in your stomach. So you think by eating hot peppers, it's going to exacerbate some kind of, you know, ulcer. It actually yes. doesn't at all.
No, it doesn't. And hot peppers are good for you. Capsaicin is really good for you.
Really good.
Yeah. It can be an irritant to your digestive system. It can be an irritant to your trachea. But as you say, you build up a little bit of a tolerance to it. And
well, you have to do, and I can attest to this firsthand, because I do have a tendency to consume copious amounts of crushed red pepper.
Crushed red pepper, yeah.
If you, I try to have about, I'm going to say a teaspoon a day.
Right.
Sometimes when I go a little bit too far, I have like 2 teaspoons or a tablespoon, it will cause severe pain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Basically, but I don't get concerned. I just say, okay, you overdid it a little bit, you know, stick to a teaspoon. Some people can only have like a quarter teaspoon.
Well, and you know, it is peppers generally can be hard to digest. So, right. They can cause, you know, there's a couple of reasons why they can cause stomach upset or gastrointestinal issues. But for the most part, the benefit to capsaicin is, far outweighs the detriment. So with that in mind, I was looking at a couple of recipes in here, and with my new friend Josie, who I love, and I'm going to go back and see again, she told me this Jamaican recipe. Because I told her what I was doing. I said, you know, I'm researching Caribbean food at the moment. And she said, oh, you've got to make what my husband loves. So it's basically swordfish with peas and greens. And I do have a picture. I remembered to take a picture. Okay. And very quickly put it together. It was not, you know, difficult at all. I basically sauteed some sliced onions. When they were translucent, I threw in some garlic. Then I put in a pretty hefty amount of allspice and a pretty hefty amount of thyme and that Scotch bonnet pepper. And I just let it cook down together in a little bit of oil. I did take the pepper out, apparently. I can't remember if her husband's name was Clifton or Clinton. Loves the Scotch bonnet, so he like chops up a bunch of it and throws it all in there. But I literally just swirled it around in the pan for about a minute, 2 minutes, and then took it out. Because my eyes were burning. I mean, I knew it was going to be potent. Then I put in some long grain rice. Oh, no, before I got to that, I put in green peas. I put in a handful of chopped spinach, and I let that cook for a bit with a little bit of broth just to keep it moist. And then I put in a cup of rice and 2 cups of chicken broth. I would have put fish broth, but I didn't have it. I've gone through that whole jar that I bought for us, the seafood stock.
You used my seafood.
No, yours is still in the glove compartment in my car. I used my entire.
All right, you can thing. Use it because I know who knows when I'm going to see you next.
No, that's fine. So I put in the rice, I put in the broth, and I covered it. And just like you're cooking rice, I let it, you know, I brought it to a boil. I let it simmer for about 15, close to 20 minutes. And then I had 4 beautiful pieces of swordfish steak. I bought 2, you know, side pieces. So I cut them in half. I had 4 beautiful pieces. And I just sort of, now the rice is starting to cook, everything sort of, you know, elevating a little bit, the vegetables and the rice. So I just sort of nestled the swordfish in there and covered it and then continued cooking it for the next, you know, 10 minutes.
So wait, did you put the swordfish in raw?
I put it in raw on top of the rice. It was almost like it was on a float.
It's like steamed.
it was like steamed. It was lovely. And I just put a little bit of salt and pepper on the swordfish itself. And I just cooked the rice, you know, continued cooking the spinach and the peas and the rice and the seasoning with the swordfish sort of nestled on top. But it was, you know, as I said, the rice had started cooking already. So it was almost like a float. It wasn't sitting submerged. So it was really steaming. I'm telling you what, it was delicious. Really? And I have a picture. And my husband was like, oh my God, this is so good. Like Mario doesn't usually... You know, we both know how to cook, so he doesn't.
Right.
He doesn't ooze compliments.
Two chefs do not gush about their own cooking.
No, we don't. But he was gushing, and I hate to tell you, but now I've talked so long, we're running out of time. We've got like 5 seconds.
Okay, we're out of time. I had a question on jerk chicken. All right, we're running out of time.
We're gonna have to do it next week.
We'll do half a segment next week.
Okay.
Thanks for listening, everybody. Caribbean food.
Talk to you next time.